Hello and welcome to the Two Guys Three Consoles podcast. My name's Matt Leach, also known as Leachman. This is episode 49, and we're changing things up a little bit this week because Jeremy is on assignment. But my co-host for this episode, you've heard the dulcet tones of the Welshman before. It's Kyle Disco Beaver Brown.
Hey Matt, how's it going? You all good?
Yeah, I'm all good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, no complaints, man. I mean, like I say, we've had a bit of a catch up about adult life taking over.
Yes.
And the pains and tribulations of adult life, but in the gaming space, really good. Really good.
Excellent. Good to hear it. So I think we're jumping with some gaming news, and I'm just going to get mine out of the way first because we've got some various different topics that we want to talk about. And the one that piqued my interest was I played Yakuza Kiwami when that came out quite a while ago, which was a remake of the original Yakuza game. And they've done Yakuza Kiwami and Yakuza Kiwami 2. And Yakuza Kiwami 3 is coming out, which is a remake of the Yakuza 3. But they've actually said that this Kiwami will be the last remake of the original games. Because what they're going to do is they've changed the story in Yakuza Kiwami 3 from the original Yakuza 3. And apparently that has had an impact on what they're going to produce after this. They haven't been specific about it. But what they're going to do is go off in a different direction, apparently, which is interesting. Because the Yakuza games, I think one of the guys from Midlife Game was playing them. I can't remember who. And I was never really into them until I tried Yakuza Kiwami. And I really enjoyed it as a story and a game, which led me to the spin-off games called Judgment and Lost Judgment, which is set in the same area at the same time, but you play as like a private detective who was a former lawyer. Something happens and he becomes like a private detective, and I really enjoyed those games. So they were spin-off games, and they kind of changed it to the Like a Dragon series. Yakuza's kind of become like a Dragon. That's the name of the series now, and there's been a few different games that I haven't played any of those. So I thought it was interesting to see what direction they take the, the Kiwami, or this is the last Kiwami game that they're doing. So we'll see where it goes from there, really. Have you played any of these games?
No, I've always had a vetted interest. It isn't like I've watched streams and seen people play them. Just because they look absolutely batshit insane every time.
Yeah, they are.
They're wild. With like a million different like gameplay styles and loads of other stuff in there. I was like, it's always been in my interest, but I've never sat down and actually played one myself.
Yeah.
But it did sound quite cool that the fact that they're taking the traditional remaster route in a slightly different direction, whereby they've remastered some and then on the back of that remaster make new content.
Yeah.
There's like a deviation of it. It's a really cool way of doing it. Again, unless it's out there, just didn't notice.
Yeah.
That seems like a really interesting way to kind of keep things alive.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, the old games, you get the old crowd with nostalgia, but then you potentially introducing a whole new slew of people into what is a brand new story in that series. That sounds good.
Yeah. I've got Yakuza Kiwami 2 on my wish list. I haven't bought it yet. I've been waiting for it to like go on sale. But they are a kind of time sink game, because like if you play through the main, you can get through the main story in like 20 hours, but if you want all the side content, it's just massive.
What did I see before? It's like this thing about I can't which one it was. Is it he's on a phone?
Yeah,
he's like in a call girly type thing, and he's chatting to girls on a phone, right? And it's all a bit awkward and a bit weird. That's the one thing I remember. And then there's like another bit where you're in a hostess club.
Yeah, the hostess pops up a lot in all the different Yakuza games. As far as
I mean, unsurprisingly, it's very Japanese, which is not a surprise at all. But I know it was like from the story perspective, it was what it was, but it was always about the side quest. There was just things to do everywhere, and that's where like the really interested and like off the wall stuff used to come up.
It's like the latest one they did was Yakuza Infinite. No, sorry, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. And there's a whole sub game in that where you manage your own island, and it's a bit like Animal Crossing. Apparently, you can spend like tens of hours just doing that aside from the main story. Which is bonkers. Very Japanese. Very Japanese.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's your new or some of the news that you got this week?
Yeah, a couple of bits. One of them is like less necessarily news as per se, more of a bit of a discussion point around news upcoming. So PlayStation have announced another State of Play that is due tomorrow, for tomorrow, the 12th. Yeah. 10 o'clock UK time. And with the usual State of Plays, you don't tend to know what's coming. No. They haven't given too much away. There's the usual leaks that are kind of out there and things that are rumors and bounding around. There has been one almost semi-confirmation, it's going to be about an hour or an hour plus, which to me, given the way in which these online presentations generally go, tells me it's going to be quite a lot of info in there. There'll be a lot of different things in there. I've done a bit of digging around and some things that I would like to see in it or just kind of interested that could pop up. One of which I'll get out of the way now because I don't think it's ever going to pop up again is Bloodborne.
Yeah.
Like, I will be very surprised if there's any Bloodborne in it whatsoever. Yeah. Long shot wild card with a Bloodborne sequel. I just don't think that's ever going to be on the cards at all. So new of the IP and they've got no interest in doing anything with it. But it might, I at this point, I would take a patch, you know, a frame rate resolution patch for like PS5 or something.
Yeah.
Uppercase scenario is maybe just like a remaster where they like, you know, 4K 60 throughout or something. But, or even a PC port, an official PC port, maybe. God knows. That's like finger in the ear job. That's going to happen. That is. Yeah. but some other bits and pieces I thought would be quite cool. I mean, Wolverine, I think, is definitely going to be in there.
Okay.
The new Insomniac one. They did a decent reveal about a couple of months ago on that one.
Yeah.
Showed some trailery type stuff. You've got an idea about what it's going to look, but you still don't know how the game is going to play, what the flow is going to be like.
No.
Because innately, Wolverine is very different than Spider-Man. You've got like the Spider-Man web sling into the city. It's all based in New York, whereas Wolverine's very visceral, hand-to-hand sort of combat, quite close in, whereas Spider-Man is like out in scope rather than focused. I've always liked Wolverine as a character generally. Just maybe because he's just a mad, angry Canadian. That's why I kind of relate or something. he's just angry all the time. But I'm interested to see how they can make a full title out of there.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they expand. I mean, they might take some inspiration from the comics like they did with Spider-Man a little bit and make it into their own kind of story. They're very good at doing that. They've got three Spider-Man games under their belt, the original Miles Morales and Spider-Man 2. So I'm looking forward to seeing this game. Hopefully it will be in the State of Play.
Hopefully. It's a big one. It's a big one for them, I think, especially with Insomniac as well. Yeah. Some other little bits and pieces, possibly Bluepoint. So Bluepoint most notably being the Demon Souls remaster when the PS4 landed a while ago.
Yeah.
There was talk of Bluepoint actually working on a live service game.
Yeah, I heard rumors about this. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's reportedly cancelled. But yeah, I know. But live service games and Sony, I mean, I'm looking at you, Concord.
Yeah.
Not a great track record anyway, but I think I would be very surprised if Bluepoint were only working on where the live service thing was.
Yeah.
They more recently than Demon's Souls were like a support studio. So they supposedly did a bunch of work for Ragnarok, God of War Ragnarok. And assisted with that one as like a support in dev. But again, they're good at the remasters. You know, are we going to see, couldn't see anything, a brand new title from them, an original IP?
An original title from them would be really cool, actually, to see what they could do as a development team with their own IP or like maybe a new IP or whatever. It would be really cool to see that.
Yeah, and I think because they've got the backing, I mean, they're a Sony-owned studio. Yeah. So they've got the wealth and the chops behind them to do it, and they've got the expertise and proven track record. So yeah, it'd be interesting if there is a surprise, something from Bluepoint, a brand new IP, or even a remaster or something somewhere. Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Metal Gear 1 was rumored at some point.
They did the Twin Snakes on GameCube, which I'd never played. Jeremy played it. I haven't. Getting hold of a copy now, it's like ridiculous money to get hold of a copy of that on a GameCube. It's crazy.
It's the GameCube market. It's the insane resale GameCube market is nuts.
Yeah, because we were talking about put it on maybe Nintendo Switch Online, but there's too many license issues with Konami in regards to Metal Gear Solid, so it probably won't show up on NSO.
No, Nintendo, unfortunately. And then outside of Blue Point, it's a little like speedrun stuff, so possibly some God of War news or something around God of War.
They announced the series, didn't they, for Amazon?
They did. I couldn't tell you who they are, but they've got their lead.
Voiced Thor in the actual game. They've chosen him as Kratos to play, which is interesting.
Yeah, and they've actually cast a younger actor as Atreus as well. I don't know who he is. I'm not really in that kind of.
No, I haven't seen that
in that sphere. Yeah. But he looks young rather than a 25-year-old man made to look younger.
Younger.
So there's also that. So possibly there's rumors of a like 2.5D Metroidvania type Greek God of War. So more in the lines of like Metroid Dread.
Okay.
But doing that, maybe that there's rumors looking for that. So that could be something. I knew the one I can think of off the top of my head is possibly even a new Devil May Cry. Whether we're at that time, it's been a while since DMC5. Could see that one. So yeah, lots of things that could pop up, a bunch of other stuff that could turn up when I'd even think about. But yeah, I don't know if I'll be watching that live because I'm getting old now, Matt, and seeing those times like to watch an hour stream.
I possibly will be. We'll see what happens. When it comes around 10 o'clock, I might end up watching half of it in the evening and half of it the next day.
Exactly. Split it up, exactly.
Yeah.
But no, I'm quite excited to see what's coming because we've got some games over the next month or so, but beyond that, there's not a huge amount. No. Apart from like your GTA 6s and that kind of stuff. So
yeah, like the big hitters coming later in the year for sure. Yeah.
That was cool. I mean, there's also another one that's kind of like quite close to me, like sort of pick up for Jeremy in this instance, is Monster Hunter. So Wilds is coming up to its first anniversary now.
Yes, it's coming in March, isn't it?
Well, it kicks off in February. So
is it February? Okay.
Yeah, 18th of February. It's a month-long celebration they're doing.
Right.
Kicks off in February. Going to start with the performance update stuff on PC because God knows they need that and they've been promised that for a while.
Yeah.
But then a bunch of other stuff. So there's like a collaboration crossover with the new Monster Hunter Stories, the third one. There's some stuff with that. There's some new quests coming in there, some new armors, weapon variations, all your stuff. Nothing major in terms of big expansion and story beats, but just your usual like extra missions, harder monsters, all that kind of thing.
When is the first big expansion happening for? They haven't said.
No news on it yet. So they've teased they're going to announce it during this month period,
right?
But it sounds as if it's not going to be this year.
Oh, okay.
If it is, I'll be surprised. It might go in line with, you know, it's still only going to be February/March and is, you know, usually in the summer afterwards. But they have said, I think they're going to announce more news about the expansion in the summer.
Right. So it might be maybe on a 2-year anniversary, they release the expansion, possibly.
Could be. I mean, they might even learn their lesson and kind of go, right, okay, we can't have a launch situation like we did with Wilds OG. We need to make sure that wherever release is almost like bug-free, performance perfect. And if that is the case, I'd understand why they'd want to push it back. In terms of hype, because that's what you kind of want with these kind of things, is to get that hype building, get more people in there.
Yeah.
Is the hype would have died off too much by the time we get to the second year? Mm-hmm. I don't know. For me personally, I haven't played Wilds in a long time.
Yeah.
I played it to death because I'm a big Monster Hunter person. I played the ones before it when Wilds came out, got the Platinum, and dabbled now and again, but haven't really been back to it since probably the first or second month of release.
Right, fair enough.
So I might go back and have a look at the first anniversary stuff just to kind of wet my foot in it. There's a friend of ours who's just actually gotten a PS5. Didn't have one before.
Mm.
And he's someone else who we met through Monster Hunter. So he's like one of the little group that we have. So he's going to be playing it for the first time.
Nice.
But that probably be an incentive. Is like, we'll jump on with him. Yeah. We'll hang with him for a bit, get through all that kind of stuff. And then once that's done, you know, see what's kind of coming. But there's a bunch of other games coming out as well over the next month or two that I'm like, I don't want to get caught up playing just Monster Hunter. I want to play some Monster Hunter as well.
Stretch your gaming legs, as it were.
Yeah. That kind of covers it for me for the major news points.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And we'll jump into what we've been playing. So I'll let you go first on this one.
Yeah, so kind of a couple of places for me. So the major one for me was earlier on, Jay was kind enough to give me a copy of Dispatch.
Oh, nice.
It's unfortunately my birthday this week.
Unfortunately, why?
Unfortunately, every year is now another
year older.
It's the inevitable march towards death, Matt. That's what it is now at this stage.
Yeah.
No, I'm messing. But no, he was kind enough to kind of, I think he waxed lyrical about Dispatch last week. And I think he wanted to share that with me. Saw an opportunity to kind of like gift me a copy without me feeling guilty for him buying it for me, and called it an early birthday present. So I've been playing that, and I will pretty much echo what Jeremy said. It is phenomenal. It's very much, again, Ad Hoc Studios is the same makeup primarily as what Telltale Games were. So if you were ever into like all the IPs, the million IPs that Telltale Games released games upon way back in the day, it feels like a leveled up Telltales game.
Oh, cool. I mean, I really enjoyed all the Telltale games that I played, even the Back to the Future one, which wasn't great, but I did enjoy it because it was Back to the Future. My favorite one of theirs was The Wolf Among Us. That was my favorite. That's because of what it was based on.
Yep.
The Walking Dead games are, you know, they were amazing, and they still are.
Yeah, it's one of those games that kind of classic. So they didn't necessarily rely on graphical prowess to deliver a game. So like, I think that kind of stuff, and because it's very stylized as well, you could probably go back and play it, and it, besides some of the issues that the Telltale engine did have, you could probably get away with it and still enjoy the game despite its age.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you said Wolf Among Us, because that is also my favorite ever Telltale game.
Yeah.
Just because I love Fables. I bought all the graphic novels and read all those. I just love
Big Yeah, I think I've got like the first seven of them. I haven't got any more. There's quite a few. I think I've got the first seven, eight, I think. But it's quite a few.
I had some of them. I gifted a bunch to Jeremy as well. I moved house a couple of years ago, and I was like, Jay, do you want them? He's like, yeah, go on in. So I kind of sent them up this way, and he's been reading them, I think. So, but yeah, from a Dispatch perspective, it's just the writing, I think, for me. The writing's so well done, and the ensemble of characters and how they interact with it. I mean, the story isn't anything new. It's not reinventing the wheel, but it's one of those things that if this was an actual TV show, it'd probably be very highly rated. Like, people would be screaming about it.
I've heard this. I've listened to it on other podcasts as well. People like raving about it, and Jeremy talking about it last week. Just excuse me a sec.
Oops. Yeah, there is.
No, but I'm Do Not Disturb, and I haven't done. Just fucking know somebody's going to try and call me.
You get a phone call mid, yeah.
I've had it before. I had it a couple of times while me and Jeremy have been recording, and the fucking phone starts ringing. I'm like, fuck! Dispatch, I am really interested in this, because Jeremy went on about it last week, and you've been playing it, and I've heard other people playing talking about it. I do want to play it. But because I'm knee-deep in another game, which we'll talk about when I get to
that. I think the one thing I would say in that one, because I know what game you're referring to, is Dispatch is almost a palate cleanser.
Right.
So like, you could definitely approach Dispatch as the same way as you watch a TV show.
Cool.
So you could jump in, you could watch an episode a night. They're only about an hour long, each episode, so not long to get through. There is a little bit of like... You pick dialogue, and that does adjust like the story a bit. There is more gameplay in this one because the name Dispatch ties into what you do in the game.
Yeah.
So you're basically dispatching superheroes to crimes and events all on your portion of the city. And there's a bunch of like synergies you have to look at and matching people. And then there's like cooldowns, and you can only have so many heroes out at once. You have to pick which one you're going. So it's almost, it's like, puzzle light thing, but again, while you're doing that, all the characters are quipping at each other, and they're building their own characters up when they're kind of doing it. So every episode is basically some of the story cinematic type stuff, and then like a dispatch thing, and then it's like that's and a bit more story, and then into the next episode. Oh, so cool. It's quite formulaic each one, but again, yeah. The pacing is really good. It never feels as if it's outstaying. If you're watching it and think, oh, I wish this cutscene had ended, or I wish this would just come on, just go on with it. It never gets that. Despite being like 9 episodes long, I think. So you're looking at a good like 9.5 hours on a playthrough to watch it, which is a decent length, to be fair, on a game like that. Well worth it. So I think you could absolutely... Again, it probably won't be in sale anytime soon, but obviously if you're knee-deep in any other game, then save the money and see if it does drop on sale. But you could absolutely play it alongside it. And it would lend itself to be done like that. So that's my big one. Other than that as well, I've also played, I'll do this quickly, is the Pragmata demo.
Okay.
Which is the new Capcom title that looked a bit weird, but absolutely up my street. These kind of strange double A Capcom titles, brand new IP, almost like a buddy type thing system in there, set on the moon. Demo is available now, I think, on all major consoles and PC. Not that long. And bizarrely, the demo has a timer on it.
Oh, really?
So when you play it, it gives you your completion time and it gives like a record. So it almost incentivizes you to go back. So after you finish the first time, you unlock extra stuff to use in a second playthrough.
Yeah.
So it unlocks new weapons and like, well, so let's go into the weird thing about it. So whilst it's a third-person fundamentally shooter slash platform adventure, there's a really unusual like hacking mechanic that you have to do as part of the combat. So when you aim your weapon at a enemy, a grid pops up on the screen. So you can still freely move around.
Yeah,
and then you use the face buttons to navigate this grid. Right. So triangles up, X is down. Well, PlayStation particularly, circle is right, and a square is left. So I thought, God, my brain isn't going to comprehend this. This is like trying to aim at an enemy in front of me, and also like navigate this grid in front of me as well. But I was surprised how intuitive it felt.
Yeah,
like the first time I did it was like, holy shit, I did that. That was cool. How did I do that? You kind of like, because I've been gaming so long on PlayStation, and again, if you were an Xbox, it'd be the same thing. If you didn't have to think that much about what direction to send the cursor, because you kind of knew where the buttons were. So it was almost like semi-instinctually already, having done it for the first time, of knowing where you go. So you have to navigate around this grid, and you can pick up like power-ups that will boost the weapon damage if you pass through it. And then you've got X amount of usages on that power-up. There's another one that allows you to kind of like freeze more than one. So if you've got a group of enemies, you can pass through this other power up in the grid and it will like freeze them all, and you can then start shooting them. There's the basic weapons, like your standard weapon is a 6-shot like pistol thing.
Yeah.
And it just recharges. So you fire a shot off all the way to 6.
Yeah.
And then you have to wait for it to kind of recharge up.
Mm-hmm.
The other weapons I thought were a bit unusual. So like, they were pick up and gone. So right. There was like a shotgun type weapon. There was a charge, like sniper rifle, long distance one. And there's like a net that you shoot to the floor that kind of freezes the enemies in place.
Yeah.
So the idea behind the net is you drop the net on the floor, the enemy stumble into it, gives you time to navigate into the grid and whatnot. And then, because you can't damage them until you've completed a grid. So you can kind of shoot at them and doesn't do much. If you like override them, as it were, by doing the grid, they then become vulnerable and you can then shoot them. But the way in which the additional weapons work is like you have like 4 usages on a shotgun and then it go. And you then pick up another one. I thought, how's that going to work? So when I was playing through, it did throw a lot at you.
Yeah.
So whether it's going to be the same in the main game or this is just the demo, but I never felt as if I didn't have access to it.
Yeah.
As if it was a sparse resource like a resi where you have to manage ammo and that kind of stuff. Didn't seem like that. It seemed like an odd choice to, because it wasn't a survival game, to limit the way it kind of handed you that ammo.
Yeah.
You did have to be, you couldn't pick everything up at once. So it was like on a four slot window. So like up, down, left, right, and D-pad was each weapon. The shotgun and the sniper shared the same slot.
Okay.
So you could only have one at a time. Yep. So what was interesting with it is you did, like, there's a boss fight kind of at the end, without spoiling anything. But then around the boss arena was all the weapons you can pick up.
Oh,
so
right.
you kind of like grab the shotgun version,
yeah,
do something, pile in the shotgun, and then you kind of whip over and then grab the sniper, and then you kind of like pull away as you just, so you're not inventory managing this per such.
No,
you're just scavenging from the arenas you're in more than like inventory management. So there doesn't seem to be like hardly any inventory at all in there.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that game. Do you ever play it called Vanquish?
Yes, that's the Platinum Games one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of, so similar stylistically, it looks very much, it kind of from a art standpoint, the aesthetic, it looks like that. Yeah. It's nowhere near as fast-paced as Vanquish is.
Oh, okay. It's slowed down. Because Vanquish was like Sea of the Past. I enjoyed that game, but fucking hell, it was like very fast-paced.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think it was very, it feels sci-fi. I don't want to say Resi 4 because it's not, but like the way in which it felt like over the shoulder was very much like Resi 4 remake. It gave that kind of vibe to how you would look over the shoulder and shoot, and then it had all these extra bits and pieces where you had the hacking and that kind of stuff. I played through it twice, 16 minutes the first time, did the speed run the second time, did it like 10 minutes on like the standard difficulty.
Not long so, at all then.
Not at all. It's enough to give you a good idea about how the game is going to play, I think. But what I've also seen, I think it's, I hate using the term budget title because it's not, it's a normal price to what I think
it's a normal price. Like, it's not your big budget AAA, you know, blockbuster game. It's like a notch down.
Kind no, of, yeah. No, it's not. It's not coming at like the 70 quid that seems to be the norm for these big ones. It's on PlayStation Store, at least it's like 50 quid.
Yeah.
So chances are, if you picked up a physical copy somewhere, you might get it for less than that.
Yeah. It's so, like the RoboCop games that I bought, that like the first RoboCop game was like 30 quid, and I got the second game for like 25 quid. But they were like, weren't AAA games at all, but they were enjoyable.
They're good, yeah. And it's definitely that kind of like AA aesthetic. So it's from Capcom, it's bankrolled by a decent publisher, but it doesn't have the same panache as like a big AAA, but then you're not paying that money either for it. No, so it's true. That trade-off.
Yeah.
But if you get a chance, I mean, the demo is available, it's not that long. You might like it, you might not, but I definitely recommend kind of trying it out. Finally, because I've had a really busy week playing games this week, I'll leave the one because you've played the other one, and you played the full title of that one. I've been playing Wolfhaven, which is the Cult of the Lamb DLC.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a massive Cult of the Lamb fan. Last time looking, I think I've clocked in over 100 hours in that game.
Wow.
So I played it a lot. So I got the Platinum back in the day on the original one. And I've been playing Wolfhaven, the DLC. It's more Cult of the Lamb.
Yeah.
The expansion was expensive. It's like 13, 14 quid for it. Gave you a bunch of two new areas or like biomes to kind of dungeon crawl through. Bunch of new weapons, whole new area. So lots of all the extra bits and pieces you'd expect from an expansion to a game. Another kind of story that was quite cool, kind of fitted into the world of Cult of the Lamb. And then on the other end of it, which is like the cult management, which is like the life simmy, farm sim type stuff. Bunch of new stuff in this is the mechanic where like winter would come in and you'd have to manage crops and it'd like freeze your villages who didn't like hire a like keep a furnace alight and all that kind of stuff. But I loved it. Like I love Cult of the Lamb anyway because it's my vibe where you can kind of play it and chill. And even like the rogue like dungeon runs I really enjoy now because I've unlocked everything in the game so far. I've got a bunch of cloaks you can get. Mm-hmm. And each cloak will give like a different thing to run on. So mm-hmm. So one of them is every time you kill an enemy, it stacks by like 5% damage increase.
All right.
And it perpetually stacks until you get hit. But if you get hit, you take double damage.
Right, okay.
So it's like that makes it really interesting because you get like stupidly overpowered.
Yeah.
So if you manage to get through that getting hit to the end boss, you can do it sometimes and like get to the boss and just one tap him because you've got like 250% times damage output. And then there's all other ones, so it's a bunch of challenge stuff. But yeah, Wolfhaven's good. Low bar of entry cost-wise. And I think if you play Cult of the Lamb and you enjoy Cult of the Lamb, it's a really good expansion and just more of Cult of the Lamb.
Nice. That's good. Sounds like you're enjoying that one.
Mm.
Well, I've been playing a lot, and I talked about this game last week, but now I've got the full game of Neo 3.
Mm.
I've put about 20 hours in so far. This is including the demo. I did about 3 or 4 hours. So about 16 hours in the main game plus 4 hours, so 20 hours in total, because your progress does carry over. Wow, there's so many systems going on in this game. I don't know where to start. I mean, if you're familiar with the first two Neo games, then you've got an idea, but this like ramps it up even more. I mean, it's not really spoiling anything to say you've got still got soul cores from the second game, which you can use in something called the yin or the yang position. If it's in the yin position, it gives you certain abilities. If it's in the yang position, it gives you other abilities. You can pick up skill points, which are different to your main skill points, to give you abilities. There's so much going on. There's a new thing in this called the Crucible, which is like these yokai being Japanese demons, for anybody who doesn't know, yokai infested areas. And you can get these crucible weapons. When you use them inside the crucible, it gives you like extra damage. But if you get hit, it also makes you get more damage if you get hit.
Yep.
It's kind of a trade-off, really. A bit like what you're talking about for the Cult of the Lamb kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then obviously you've got your normal skill points for your samurai and your ninja, because in this Neo, in the first two Neo games, you could focus on a build. Like you could have a magic build, you could have a ninja build, you could have a samurai build, you can have like a rogue build, all different types of builds. In this one, you can kind of do the same thing, but specifically you've got two stances. You've got the samurai stance and the ninja stance, and you can switch between them on the fly. So you've effectively got two builds going at the same time, and you obviously you can level up your strength and your agility and all the other stats that you've got in it.
Yeah.
This is the first Neo game where I haven't needed any help so far, as in regards to how I feed to certain bosses, because the open world is crazy. Like the way the first two games were set up was there was mission structures.
Yes.
So you go into an area, you'd complete all the missions, you'd move on to the next area. This one, the areas are open, quote unquote. So you can rove around the area. You're not locked within a mission structure, but you're say the first time period, because you also go with different time periods in this game. It's another thing to add to it.
Time travel, excellent. Yep.
Yeah. And I think this first era is made up of 6 or 7 different zones. I think it kind of plays out a bit like, kind of like Assassin's Creed, like Odyssey or Origins or Shadows, kind of like that, where they're specific levels or suggested levels for each different region, each of these 6 or 7 different regions. And I've just been roving around and enjoying the open worldness of it, where you can do like side quests, you can find the little kadamas, which give you like extra elixirs to heal yourself. You can get different ninja locks and samurai locks to up your levels. There's all sorts of different things going on, and it's probably the best version of a Neo game that they've made, because the combat's always been great in these games. It's always been good. I've only actually fought 1, 2, 3, 4 story bosses. I've been playing for 20 hours. They have recycled a couple of bosses from previous games, but they're still fun to beat because, you know, they're still challenging. But you can make this game as easy or hard as you want it to. Like, you can literally just roam the open world, level up as much as you want, and you can take the bosses down easily. I just think is why I haven't needed a walkthrough or anything, because I've just been enjoying the world.
I hate to make the comparison. Is it like, have you played Elden Ring?
I have played Elden Ring, yes.
So would you say it's kind of got that vibe where if something kind of like is a bit of a wall, you can head in a different direction and level
absolutely
up and do some other stuff?
You can absolutely do that. Like in the first two Neo games, you were gated, where if you couldn't beat a boss, you couldn't progress. That's not the case here. If you can't beat the boss, you can go away and explore for 10, 20, 30 hours if you want, come back and beat the boss. So it is kind of like Elden Ring in that respect, where you can completely just wander off, do whatever side missions, take down, because there's enemies roaming the free world, like the yokai and the normal human enemies, and they respawn every time you rest, like a la Souls.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So you can just farm if you want. If you want to do that, you can do that. It's not a problem. Like I went to a place called the Hidden Caves, which is in the third or fourth area. And that boss was one of the first bosses in the very first Neo games.
Yep.
She's like a vampire lady. Can't remember her name.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
So she likes hiding out in these caves, and I couldn't beat her at first. So I went away and did something else for a few hours, came back, beat her straight away. So you're not getting frustrated, or at least I haven't been frustrated so far in this game. It is very much they kind of expanded on the exploration. You're rewarded for exploring in this game. It's not like a waste of time. A bit like the Souls games, you're always rewarded for going off the beaten track and finding like a side area where there was like a side boss, or different weapons or whatever. You was always rewarded in Souls games for that kind of thing.
I saw something when I was playing the demo, where there was like almost like a malevolent spirit type thing.
Yes.
So it would the more people this thing killed,
yes,
it would like be more powerful. And it would like you could then spawn it and fight it and like get high reward.
That's correct. It would move.
I tried to take that down
a couple of times, like within the first few hours, and I just got absolutely trashed.
Right. Okay.
The thing is, every revenant that you fight, a revenant is a player who's been killed. It's part of the online part of it. It's a player who's been killed. The amount of those you killed, the stronger the demon gets.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah.
So I haven't gone back to it yet because I got my ass handed to me. So, I've been like, oh, well, I'll come back and do that later. But then I realized I've killed like 20 more revenants since then. So it's probably going to be even stronger. So we'll see what happens. I think there is a trophy for killing one of those things. I haven't done that yet. There's also these things called formidable enemies in this, where it's like in a specific area you come across an enemy that have like, it's just a standard type of enemy where you just kill. They have like a stamina bar and a health bar, and they've got a name. These side missions in the first Neo games where you could fight a certain person or a certain boss, they're just part of the open world in this. They're called formidable enemies, and you get rewards for defeating them, different skill points or better weapons or better, because the loot is like Diablo. It's got so much loot in this game. I think there's more loot in this game than either of the first two games. And the amount of loot you get is just insane. You spend half your time going through loot saying, oh, that's got different abilities there, and that's got more damage, and that's got more defense, and that's got some more blah 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 blah. You spend a lot of time in the menus, but that's always been the case with the Neo games.
The one thing I found with previous Neos is I had to restrict myself to just like, until I reached almost end game, I would just go with whatever gives you more defense, like whichever is a higher level, just stick that on.
Yeah,
I'm not giving much thought. And then when you kind of hit end game, then start looking at building like sets with set bonuses and that kind of thing. Is that still a thing in Neo 3?
Absolutely, it is. Yeah, that is still a thing. You have different set bonuses for different sets of armor. Like there's one called the Crimson Warrior, I think it is, where if you have his set of armor, you're really, really beefy, but you're very, very slow because your weight is a very heavy armor. So, yes, you're like almost like a tank, but you can move very slowly. So I like to zip around, which is where the ninja build comes into it. You could have the heavy tank build, and then you just press a button, and then you're in your ninja build, and you can zip around. So that's the beauty of doing it this time. You're not, locked into one type of build, which is really, really clever the way I've done it. Because I was a bit weird at first, but then once I got used to it, it actually works really well. They've tied it in to the way that the combat flows as well. Like in Neo 2, I think it might have been Neo 1, where they do like they've got this red aura around an enemy.
Yes.
If you time it right, you press your transformation button to go from one stance to the other. If you time it right, it does massive damage to them.
Yep.
So, yeah, they tied it in to that, which is really good. I'm going to be playing this game I'm hoping to actually finish the main story before Resident Evil 9 shows up in a couple of weeks' time. But yeah, I'm going to have to play it like every day for multiple hours if that's going to happen. I'm not sure whether I can do that or not, but we'll see. But I've been really enjoying it. And I know you've played the demo, haven't you?
Yeah, played through the demo. I don't know. This will lead into our discussion point a bit later, actually, with the first time I tried it. But when I first put the demo up, I was just getting like hammered in the tutorial. But like I fired it up at like 11:30 at night on a weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I hate this game. Stupid game on rubbish. And just tossed the controller down.
Yeah.
And then I think came back to it with a kind of like a fresh head on. And I was like, oh, okay, this is how it works, how it goes. And I had a bit of a wander around. Like inevitably died a lot. Because the demo gives you a lot of actual gameplay worlds, and you get a good idea about what you're stepping into with the full game. So again, saying about demos and stuff, if you want to give it a go, I'm not too sure, the demo will give you a pretty good idea about what the main full game is. But I enjoyed it. And the point you made, I didn't actually think about it like this, is the fact that you flick between that samurai and ninja one, but it gives you the ability to flick between builds on the fly.
Yes.
Which I don't think is kind of like in a lot of games out there where you can just, as part of gameplay flow, change whole builds.
Yeah.
Which is something I've never really noticed. Or if it is, I haven't paid attention to it and it's not been that radical. But this one seems like when you said it clicked and go, oh yeah, crap, yeah, you could have like a really beefy tank build, heavy hitting, hard defense, and then at the click of a button, do like the parry move thing and then be zipping around it in ninja mode.
Yeah, exactly.
And that dynamic of like the one gameplay thing to the other will probably keep the game interesting a lot longer as well. Because you're not locked into, oh, I've got a magic build, I have to be a magic user now. You can kind of go, wow, I've got two builds I really like, let's pop and change between the two. And you can approach every scenario kind of different with each one as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still a challenging game. The Neo games always have been, but this seems like, I don't want to say easier, I would say it's more accessible. Let's go with that. Like if you'd never played a Neo game before and you jumped into this one, you wouldn't have a harder time as if you jumped into Neo 1, because Neo 1, that first level in the Tower of London, absolutely get your ass handed to you in that fucking game. It took me hours to get through that first section. It's madness, really. And that's supposed to be the tutorial. You don't actually get any guidance on how to play the game until after you've completed that section.
Yep.
which is mental.
It is. I mean, the one thing I will say for Neo is, for as much as like it's more accessible, it is still overwhelming
with
the sheer amount of systems it throws at you.
Yeah, there's so much going on. Soul cores, skill points, you know, different weapons. You've got massively different weapons you can choose. But the good thing they've done about this version of Neo is you can reset your points at any time.
Like,
literally, you can set up your points, and if you don't like it or you don't like the weapon, you can bang, reset everything, no cost, try out something different, which is amazing. And you can
do
both samurai and ninja, which is really, really excellent. I wish more developers would do that. You can literally reset your points, reset all your skills, and try something different if you don't like it. It's really amazing that they've done that.
Yeah, because I struggle to understand why developers sometimes make the choice to make it restrictive in order to change up and try different stuff.
Yeah,
because it sounds like it just encourages experimentation, and it's like, certainly with a game like Neo, which has so many different like systems and things in it, being able to chop and change and find the one that works for you without penalty.
Yeah, it's great.
Seems a no-brainer, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, my go-to for Neo has always been Dual Swords. I've always played it that way. I did play Kasurigama and Axe a bit, but Dual Swords is my go-to. And I've done that this time as well. I did Kasurigama for a bit. I did, what's the other one? Not the Odachi, can't remember.
One of the single katana.
And I was like, no, dual swords for me. Definitely dual swords for me. So this is what I've ramped up. I just love the dual swords. I've always had. Kasurigama's pretty good. I did use that quite a lot in Neo 2, Kasurigama.
Yeah.
It was my dual swords all the way. But like say, you can just, at the click of a button, you can respec entirely, no penalty, which is brilliant. So yeah, I'm really, really enjoying this game. I probably will be getting the platinum for it. It's going to take me a long time to get the platinum because there's so much content. It's amazing. But I will be getting the platinum for this one.
Is there any, I mean, you might not know off the top of your head because it's relatively new in it. Is there any trophies that are linked to cooperative play? Because I know Neo does encourage co-op.
Yeah, I haven't seen any specifically for cooperative play. I must admit, I haven't looked at the trophy list a huge amount. But I didn't see any relating specifically to cooperative play. No, I haven't seen any, but I'll report back on that because, like I said, I looked at the trophy list extensively.
Yeah. Because I did play, I played Neo 1 and Neo 2, Neo 1 solo, Neo 2 with Jay playing it for another friend of ours who played from start to finish. That was rock hard because it was actually harder in co-op than it was in single player. Because it would ramp up the difficulty.
Yeah, it ramps up. The more people we have, the harder it is.
And I swear we made it harder for ourselves. And we used to do it. We used to hit our head against the wall trying to beat certain bosses. And then we go, oh, we'll go by ourselves. And we do it solo and like obliterate there. And it's like, why is this so damn hard with like three people over one person? But we enjoyed it. But
it was the spider cow, I think. Jerry.
That was the one. Yeah. Bloody spider cow. Yeah. No, it sounds exciting. It's on my radar. I think with everything I've got kind of going on with the games I've got, I might end up picking it up if I can find it reasonable. Like Pragmata is a while away from me. That's like April time, I think. So that's a few months left yet. So I'm at a place where I might treat myself to a game. So it could be Neo.
Well, I managed to get the physical version of Shop 2, the disc version, for 56 quid.
Okay.
And it's 70 quid on PSN. So that's nearly 20 quid saving. So, you know, it's not far off. But,
not at all.
Yeah. So on to our next section, I think, which is Retro Corner. I'll go first on this one.
Yeah,
so this game was the reason why I bought my first souped up PC.
Oh,
this is going back to when was it? October of 1997. And I just got my first job and I've moved down to West London, out on the outskirts in a place called Hillingdon. And I bought a £2,000 PC.
Jesus, that wowzers. Like,
I went onto this website, I put in what I wanted, and I rang them up and said, when can you deliver this? We said, you'll have it in a week's time. And I was like, yes. So I had this all singing, all dancing PC, and I bought this game. Funnily enough, it was, I mean, it's still the early days of the internet then, like late 90s. And I ordered this game online, and it was Star Wars Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2.
Oh.
I'd never played Dark Forces, which is a Star Wars shoot 'em up, basically first-person shooter.
Yep.
That's what Dark Forces is. There is a remastered version of that available on the PlayStation and Xbox, I think, which I've not played. I have played a PC version of Dark Forces years after I played Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight. But Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight, it was the first kind of first-person perspective of a Star Wars game that I played. Yeah. Because you play as this guy, what's his bloody name, Kyle... Well, Katarn, I think that's his name. Let's double check. I'm pretty sure it is.
I should know this.
Yeah.
It's my name.
Where is it? I'm sure it's Kyle Katarn.
That does sound familiar from the Star Wars.
Yeah, Kyle Katarn, yeah. He knows about the Force, but he's not a Jedi. You know, I'm a bit like Luke in kind of Empire Strikes Back at the beginning. He's not really a Jedi. He knows about the powers, but he's still kind of learning. So this is you have Force powers in this game, but you've also got a lightsaber and you can also fire weapons. It's a mashup of Force powers and basically shooting stormtroopers.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. And it's got, they had the Star Wars music because it's on CD. You had all the Star Wars music. So the intro music and the, you know, Empire Death March, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's all in there. And the basic premise of the game is one of these Jedi has gone rogue. He's become a dark Jedi. So it's not necessarily a Sith. It's kind of they're still Jedi, but they're using their powers for the forces of evil, not good. So right. they're not full Sith, but they're not really Jedi either. They're kind of somewhere in between. They call them Dark Jedi. And he's nicked some artifacts, some MacGuffin that they needed for the plot, you know.
Yeah.
And your job is to go and retrieve it and blah, blah, blah. Just an excuse to go and kill, you know, stormtroopers, really.
Stormtroopers, yeah.
Which is no, don't really need much of an excuse to do that. But I remember, because I was, my job then was, I was a field service engineer. So I was out all day driving, going different places. And I come home in the evening, have some tea and boot this up and play it all night until the early hours and then rinse and repeat. And I think I completed it within like 2 weeks of getting it, because I just played it every night for like hours. Really enjoyable game, you know, especially using the force powers, like force run and force jump and that kind of thing. It's really cool. Yep. And the levels were, they were very linear levels. And once you finished the level, you didn't really go back to it. It was kind of finished that level, move on to the next one. Because that's kind of how the structure of these games was then. But yeah, I mean, it was done by LucasArts. I think it was LucasArts at the time. I think they LucasArts. Got a Jedi there. Hang on. Yeah, LucasArts before became, because it used to be before LucasArts was a thing. I think it was Lucasfilm Games, and then it became LucasArts. And then they've gone back to Lucasfilm Games again. That's how it worked. But anyway, it was LucasArts, same developers who did like Monkey Island games and those kinds of things. It's the same developers as those. But yeah, it was a good game. My first proper game that I played on my PC rig, which that PC lasted me quite a while before I had to end up upgrading it. I played other games on it as well.
A response to that, Bobby, I should think you have to spend $2,000 on it, Matt.
Well, you know, you got disposable income when you're like 23, 24. So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, very true.
Going out,
very
getting, true. Going clubbing and getting pissed up, always spending my money on PC. This will lead into what we're going to talk about later, but yeah.
It will, yeah, absolutely.
So that's it for my retro corner. What's yours?
Yeah, a little bit more recent, but technically kind of still retro. Hitting it into the 360 era and into 2010. So Ninja Theory title, and Ninja Theory coming on the back of the PS3 Heavenly Sword.
Yep.
This game apparently was originally pitched as a TV show.
Really?
Which I didn't realize.
You can kind of see that when you're playing through it. You can kind of see, I mean, yeah. It's based on Odyssey to the West, isn't it? So
it is, yeah. So when they were going, well, they were in production potentially with this sequel, The Heavenly Sword, went to pitch this TV show. TV show pivoted into this game I'm referring to and stopped Heavenly Sword sequel. And they went straight into this one. So this is Enslaved, Odyssey to the West.
Yeah.
So Ninja Theory are always good at their like kind of world building and their person-centered games. And this was very much, I'd consider, like, of the time, almost kind of a little bit ahead of its time with the way in which it played out with, like, the dynamics of the characters and that kind of stuff. So if you haven't played Enslaved was a third-person action game. As you mentioned, likely inspired by the Chinese story Journey to the West.
Journey to the West, not Odyssey to the West, sorry. Okay, yeah. I kind of made the name away there.
So, you did get the name right. So, like, Enslaved was called Enslaved Odyssey to the West. That's the game title. And it was based loosely on some of the characters and stuff from Journey to the West.
Yeah.
But, like, again, some Andy Serkis, who'd worked with Ninja Theory before, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
Came on board for this one and pushed it. What I didn't realize and actually remembered after looking back into this is Alex Garland, as in 28 Days Later fame writer-director, wrote some of this. He was like heavily involved in like the writing and some of the production stuff of Enslaved as well. So it kind of, that element of it being almost kind of TV show aesthetic with the way the characters and the cutscenes are playing out made sense because of his pedigree. You know, it kind of come from that sort of Hollywood movie-esque filmmaking kind of background. The sad thing for me is it didn't, whilst it was good critically, didn't sell.
No, didn't sell hardly. Well, it sold some copies, but not. It deserved to sell better than it did, for sure.
They did. I think Last Call, they don't have definite figures on it.
Yeah.
But it didn't reach a million. I think it got to shy of 800,000.
Is that all? I thought you'd break the million mark. That's a shame.
Which, having played it, I think is insane.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I haven't been back recently, but I've got such fond memories of playing that game back in, again, it's like 16 years ago at this point now. But yeah, it wasn't without its flaws. Like, there were some graphical and frame rate type stuff. The PlayStation version apparently fared worse off compared to the Xbox 360. So I was on the 360 when I played it.
Yeah.
But all the motion capture stuff, because again, it was fully mo-capped. So all the cutscenes were motion captured. I want to say, I can't remember the name of the guy. There's another character called Pigsy in it. So it's Monkey, which is Andy Serkis. There's Trip, who's the other protagonist in it. And then you got Pigsy, who is inspired by like the pig character from Journey to the West, if anyone's familiar with it. And it was another, I can't remember his name, I feel awful doing it, but it was another famous British actor who voiced him.
Yeah.
And again, solid voice cast, like from a voice acting perspective, like phenomenal. Like, it's Andy Serkis to begin with. So he's like, you know, but Andy Serkis at that point had done like Lord of the Rings and the Gollum stuff, so he's kind of known for that, hitting the heights of that.
Yeah.
And then moving into mocap with this kind of thing, and it does shine through. Like, all the cutscenes and the dialogue are kind of a cut above. The gameplay is kind of samey,
I suppose. Relatively compared to modern games, I suppose.
Yeah, but then we're comparing apples to oranges by saying something 16 years old compared to like modern games with all the quality of life and lessons learned, all the games that come out now. I mean, I would love to see a remaster of this game. I think it's well deserved. It did get a standalone DLC as well, which I didn't realize, Pigsy's Perfect 10, which, funny enough, was lauded even more than the original game.
Yeah,
like the DLC was well praised by critics and stuff. Didn't hit the sales, unfortunately, as is the case, but massively underrated gem, I think.
Yeah,
whether or not it's one you could go back and play now, because whether the frame rate stuff would be too jarring for a modern gamer, but I do know it is on PC. So usually on PC, you can, like, there's mods and there's things that the community do and that kind of stuff to make the experience a little bit better. But I mean, if you've played it, and there weren't many people that I spoke to that I know who played games that had played it, I guarantee you pretty much everyone I know speak fondly of it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it at the time. It just came along the right time for me. And I sat down and played it. Did I play it on Xbox 360? I think I played it on PS3. I did really enjoy this game, because I enjoyed the story, obviously based on Journey to the West, which was there's an 80s show called Monkey Magic, which is also based on the same source material, and it kind of reminded me a little bit of that.
And I don't know what it is. I've got to think, because I'm a tall guy anyway. I just like the aesthetic of Monkey. He was just this massive bruiser, huge arms. Like, the traps were massive on this thing. Huge hunched over figure. Andy Serkis with his kind of gruff voice, but like kind of almost silent protagonist a little bit, didn't say an awful lot.
Didn't say a lot. Only spoke when spoken to, kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I vibe with that kind of stuff anyway. But
remember how weird the ending was, though.
Yes, I do.
What?
Obviously, part of if people aren't familiar with the general story is set in like a post-apocalyptic future. Where robots are kind of taken over, think like years after mankind's gone, and there's vestiges of humans around and that kind of stuff. So it's all, but despite it being that kind of post-apocalyptic thing, it was very green and very colourful as a game.
Very colourful,
Which was a stark contrast to a lot of the stuff that was landing on Xbox, like the kind of the Gears of War, brown realism. So it was a nice change of pace and refreshing from that perspective. I mean, as we know, Ninja Theory went on to produce like The Devil May Cry that no one likes, which is like criminal. And then most recently, like the Senua what's the name of the game? Not Senua's Hellblade. Sacrifice.
Hellblade. Yeah, Hellblade. Senua's Sacrifice. And there's the second one, which I haven't played.
Yeah, so and the Hellblade titles. So, yeah, they went on so much. But one thing I've learned, because I did a bit of research into it just for this one, is Ninja Theory have never had any kind of critical, like massive, massive financial success.
No.
They've always had games that have been like well-loved and really artistic, very stylized and kind of well-imagined, but they've never really taken off and sold a lot.
No.
Because what I'd learned as well is that they originally started off working with Microsoft.
Yes.
They had a game called Kung Fu Chaos on the original Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a Smash Brothers-esque sort of brawler. That didn't sell that great. Then they went to PlayStation and did Heavenly Sword,
yep.
Which they also didn't sell amazingly well. No. It wasn't massively successful. But then still went on to make like Enslaved, went on to make The Devil May Cry, then like the Hellblade stuff. And again, the Hellblade stuff probably is, I would imagine, one of their better successes.
Probably, I would say so.
And now they're under, like, are they back under Microsoft again now?
I'm not sure, you know. I
can't remember.
I think they might still be under Microsoft, or they might have gone independent again. I can't actually remember.
I know they went like Microsoft, and then they went Sony, and then independent, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but just look, they're still part of Xbox Game Studios.
Yeah, Xbox, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a funny one, because like, usually, especially in today's modern age, you see studios that launch a game that isn't that well, doesn't sell that well. And it does tend to, unfortunately, lead to the demise of the studio. The studio disappears. But Ninja Theory have just kind of held on, and they just seem to be around and still doing it. And I again, because that's a fact, whether we'll see a remaster of Enslaved, I don't know, because apparently Namco Bandai own the rights to it.
Yeah.
They
need to do like licensing stuff again, like we mentioned before. It's like can be a real headache trying to get games remastered or remade with different licenses and that kind of thing.
Yeah, which is a massive shame. But that's my pick for, and I did have a lot of fun going back and remembering it on researching it as well. So I'm glad I kind of went in the rabbit hole with that one.
Yeah, it's a good one, that one. So we're gonna take us into Platinum Watch. After my 82-hour marathon of Red Dead Redemption, I'm not really thinking about my next Platinum yet, even though I've mentioned I probably will get Neo 3 Platinum. But are you working on a Platinum?
Kind of, yeah. So I mentioned Cult of the Lamb, Wolfhaven. Wolfhaven doesn't have a Platinum trophy, unfortunately, because it's an expansion. So I have got all the trophies, so I'm back at 100% on that game. Because I liked it so much, I played through Dispatch. When I finished it, I was on about 50, 60% of the trophies. And a lot of the ones that were still available seemed quite fun to get.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start. I've done some already. I've gone back and played through some of the stuff. But I'm going to probably go through and aim for Dispatch Platinum, which doesn't seem that hard.
Oh, nice. Cool.
And it's just a case of like replaying some stuff and making some alternative choices.
Yeah.
But again, it was like, I'm not normally one to rewatch shows.
No.
I'm not one of those people. But with this one, is enough gameplay in there to kind of draw back in to let me play it through while watching the cutscenes and still enjoy it. Because again, all the interactions are just stellar in there, and the characterizations are fab, the voice acting is phenomenal. So getting the chance to replay it and watch it again, I'm all for it. So yeah, probably working, don't have it, but I'm working towards the Platinum on Dispatch.
Oh, nice one. Cool. That's good. So that brings us into our main topic this week. And this topic this week is gaming after 40 years old.
Yeah, so kind of gaming over 40. So I'm in that bracket now. I was catching you and Jay up. And I'm now there. And when we were sort of discussing or thinking about, when I was thinking about ideas, I was sort of thinking, okay, well, both of us kind of have a similar background with gaming, as in we've always done it.
Yeah.
From a very, very young age, gaming's always been around. And like, you started a little bit earlier than I did, but not by a massive amount, but you were gaming much sooner. I probably didn't hit my stride until the early 90s.
Yeah.
But you're a bit earlier. But then since I started, I've just always gamed.
Yeah.
But then it's been interesting over the years how society's perception on gaming has kind of shifted.
Definitely. I mean, even comparatively, even the early 90s, because it was the early 80s for me, it was like 82 when I first started gaming. It's very, you know, it was all about arcade games then, not really home computers. Home computers were just becoming a thing in the early 80s. But even in the early 90s, it was kind of, you know, almost seen as a niche kind of hobby, really. And sometimes frowned upon by various different people, whatever. But, you know, it's even in the span of between 1990 and 2000, things changed so much.
They did. I mean, and I think with that as well comes with kind of growing with it. Like, we are of a generation, I think, that's grown with the zeitgeist of gaming as it's progressed further and further and gotten more and more prolific, and it's become more accessible, and it's expanded across multiple different genres, pulling in multiple different types of people. Like, you've got the early 80s, you've got like a mid 80s where the console started to arrive, like your Nintendos and your Spectrums and Ataris. You then push into the more dedicated consoles of things like your Mega Drives and your Super Nintendos, and then into like the 3D realm of like PlayStation and kind of beyond from there. But I'd probably say around the 3D age is when you probably start to see that shift, that slight shift to gaming becoming more of an acceptable hobby at home. And then you push well into like the 2000s, and then it just kind of took off.
Yeah.
And then you've got like your Xboxes and your PS2s and PS3s. And from there, then like the proliferation of like online gaming. I mean, PC gamers were always there with it.
Yeah.
In terms of online, there was there a lot well before console gaming were. But I have my history based in console gaming. Like, I did have a PC, but growing up as like a teenager and into my early 20s, I was always a console gamer. But I would find myself like, when games would come out, I'd go to midnight releases.
Yeah,
I remember when GTA San Andreas came out, and I got my parents to take me to like the local electronics boutique, which might have been at the time, for a midnight launch for that.
Yeah,
I did midnight launch for Fable, the original Fable on Xbox.
Wow.
And a funny story about that one is, me and a friend who lived like two doors up from I did, we both went out on a midnight launch, and he picked up Far Cry 2 and I picked up Fable. And he came back to mine for a bit and watched me play Fable.
Yeah.
Thought, oh no, went and played Far Cry 2, didn't like it, went back the next day, swapped it for Fable.
Oh, wow.
And he picked up Fable.
He swapped the game.
Yeah, swapped the game for Far Cry 2. Yeah. But then that was back then, like early 20s, where I could do it. I could stay up until the small hours of the morning.
Yeah.
I think I did the same again. I remember once, not long married, and it might have been GTA 4 when that came out. Went to a midnight release, saw that one, brought it home, and it must be like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the lounge trying to keep quiet. My other half stumbles in, looks at me, looks at the time, goes, "What are you doing?" And just turns on and goes back to bed. And I'm like, "Oh no!" I'm seeing when normal life resumes, I'm going to get the Netflix thing up until 5 a.m. in the morning now playing Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
But then, like, that's kind of what I was able to do, you know, as a lot younger. I didn't necessarily have the adult responsibilities. I still enjoyed gaming. And kind of like from a disposable income point of view, I kind of had it to spend on anything.
Yeah.
So there wasn't your Game Pass or your game library. There wasn't your PlayStation library as is now. If there's a new game out that you wanted, you kind of had to buy it. Like, if you were lucky enough to have a Blockbuster or somewhere that rented nearby, that could have been an option. But not all the games were available through that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you'd find yourself going and having to drop the money on just outright and just buy it and take a chance on it. And it's like, right, if it didn't, fine, on to the next one, and I'll spend more time playing the next one.
Exactly. But it's like when I moved down to London in like 97, I had, I think I still have my SNES. I can't remember. I bought my N64 after I'd bought my PlayStation. So I already had a PlayStation, and I've been playing Tomb Raider and then Tomb Raider 2. And I had the PC as well.
Yeah.
I had the PC and the PlayStation. And then I heard about Ocarina of Time. And I'm like, I've got to get an N64 as well then, haven't I? Because, you know, and because like you say, because you had that disposable income, because it didn't have a partner, I wasn't that many kids, it was like mid-20s, you know, I had the disposable income, I was able to stand up all night playing fucking Ocarina of Time or Final Fantasy VII, or, you know, Dark Forces 2, Jedi, or whatever the fuck it was.
He was able
to do that then. You could do it. But it's a bit of a different story these days.
It absolutely is. And funny you mentioned Ocarina of Time, because like my love affair with Zelda started at the SNES level, but Ocarina of Time, I never forget, it didn't necessarily have like a particularly well-off background growing up. Eldest in the family, wasn't well to do, but my parents always did kind of encourage, and they were like happy to fuel my gaming thing. So it was after, it was about 6 or so months after Ocarina of Time came out, we looked in the free ads. Do you remember those?
Yeah,
the big ads. yellow paper type thing. Yeah,
I remember.
Looked in there, and Newport in South Wales, they had one, which isn't far from where I live. And I remember going with my old man and going into like the dingiest, horriblest house I've ever seen. Like old carpet.
Was it like a drug
den? Yeah, it's like a drug den. I'm like in my mid-teens. I'm like 13 at this point. So I'm like, we're like some skinny wretch with my dad kind of thing.
With me.
Yeah. And I went in and bought this like Nintendo 64, the copy of Ocarina of Time. I then unfortunately got really ill the day after. And I was off school for like 2 weeks.
Oh, no.
Like, oh, so how convenient. And literally just spent like the 2 weeks playing Ocarina of Time.
Wow, amazing.
But again, that was the time I could do it. I didn't have any responsibility. I wasn't at school where I probably should have been, to be honest. But I just spent my time playing Ocarina of Time. Like, fast forward to now, with like we're both kind of in different stages of our lives. And like you've been through what I've been through already with like kids and things and kind of grow it. And yours are much older than mine are. But even so, it's just like when they were younger, your time was of a different way. As they got older, you had different times to play games. And the one thing I would say that I've never really had is like a drop off.
Yeah.
I've never been through like a long state where I've stopped playing games.
Yeah.
They've always kind of been around, like obviously sometimes not as much as others. There has been occasions when I've like jumped in 1 or 2 hours a week rather than like the 20, 30 I can play some plus I can play sometimes now. But despite that, they've always been a constant.
Yeah.
And I think as I've gotten older, I've kind of come to appreciate games in a different way than I did before.
Definitely.
Is my time spent is more valuable when I'm playing.
Yeah.
So I won't just throw myself into a game and think, I'm going to like this. I'll keep pushing on for another 2 or 3 hours. I'll keep doing it. And I was like, right, I don't enjoy this. I don't need to. And I think part of the problem with that mentality is not just getting older and more responsibilities as being an adult, but it's the proliferation of things like the Game Pass library and PlayStation library, is the games have kind of lost their value a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, even the Nintendo one, I mean, Metroid Prime 4 came out at the beginning of December.
Yeah.
And it came out on that Friday, and I'd finished it like 2 days.
Yeah.
Not intentionally. It's just because I've just played it and I was enjoying it. And I was like, I'm just going to keep playing this until I want to stop. And I didn't stop, and I completed it within 2 days, which is a bit insane to do that, really. Because that is an exception to the rule, because what I used to do when I was like mid-20s, mid-30s, I'd be playing like 4 different games at once, which I was able to, I could balance it then. I'm like, I'm going to play 2 hours of this game tonight, and I'm going to play 2 hours of this other game, and that's what I'm going to play tonight. Tomorrow night, I'll switch it around. I stopped doing that about 10 years ago, maybe now. So, it was early 40s. I will play a game and I'll stick with it. Like, you know, I'll just play it until I've either completed it, or if I'm not enjoying it, I'll just move on to something else. Like you said, it's like with Stellar Blade. I put a solid chunk of time into that game, probably about 20, 25 hours, and I just wasn't enjoying it. So I've just stopped playing it. And same with Silent Hill F. I just wasn't enjoying playing the game. And you know, back in the day, I would have forced myself to even if I didn't like it, to play through it. Because I bought it and I spent my money on it, and I didn't want to waste my time not playing it, if you know what I mean, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Now it's like, if I'm not enjoying it, no, let's move on to something else. Although my perception of games as I've got older, especially the last probably 5-10 years, I keep doing this. I'll buy a game or I'll get a game bought for me and I'll play it for a couple of hours, maybe 3-4 hours. And then I won't go back to it for months just because I've played something else. A bit like when I played Ghost of Yote last year, I didn't play anything else apart from Ghost of Yote. And so I finished it, got the platinum, and then I moved on to something else. But some games I've like, for example, Ninja Gaiden 4 got Christmas. I played like an hour of it and I just haven't come back to it. Because I've been playing something else. Do you know what I mean? I've done that a lot the last 5 or 10 years. I've got a game. I've really wanted the game. I played it for a couple of hours and then something else has come along and I played that instead and go back to it. That has changed for me.
Because I would say in the last, mine's slightly different journey to that. So I'm with you in the aspect of like having multiple games on the go at the same time. It's just not a thing. Like my brain just can't contemplate like flicking from control schemes from one to the other and keeping tabs on everything. But I would probably say the major switch I've had in probably the last like 10 to 15 years for me is we've mentioned Midlife Gamer in the past, and all three of us, me, you and Jimmy, were all part of that contingent of Midlife Gamer, that little community group. I would probably say could be like 10, 12 years ago or so. They used to have like regular online community nights. So we'd play like the Gears of War online or whatever else game is of the flavor of the time online. And that's what I'd do. Like I would play online rather than play in these like insular single player story driven experiences. So I would, you know, I would smash Halo 2 on the original Xbox for hours on end.
Yeah,
I'd come home from school and college and just spend like 7 or 8 hours doing big team battle on Halo and online. Or the Gears of War franchise, like Gears of War 2, come home every Friday, have a Gears and beer session with all the guys from Midlife Gamer.
Yeah.
And that's what I do, it'd be online. Whereas I find myself not playing online anymore. Even if there's an online version of a game I've got, there's an online aspect to it. I'm not driven to it, I'm not drawn to it.
Yeah,
me think either. I did try and jump in because not the most recent quality, the one before, I did pick that up at launch. And played a little bit online, probably like 10, 15 hours online. And I did enjoy it, but I was like, I got to a stage where it's just like, I can't keep up with this anymore. It's just wild. Like, and then I understand why, because it's a generational thing. There's kids playing it, faster reflexes, you know, better eyeballs than I've got, quicker brains than I've got. But it was like, I tried to play the Warzone thing, which is the Battle Royale thing. And I just like, I didn't have the patience for either. I find myself like less online and more on the kind of single play stuff. And then the online stuff is very particular.
Yeah.
So biggest one in the last few years for me, Jay's involved in this, is a small group of us will like have a Sunday evening, especially, and we'll go through a game on a Sunday and it'll need to be like an online game. So, yeah. We've done all the usual suspects, like me, him, and another friend has done like a lot of the Dark Souls stuff. Jay's mentioned before, like I took him through Bloodborne. We've played Strange Brigade, which is a bit of a throwback, which is a Rebellion game that is online one.
Yeah.
We're currently playing Zombie Army 4 online on a Sunday. I wouldn't normally have touched that game.
No, because there's no normally play.
No. But because for me, my habits, and there's a need for like something that will create all four of us online for a couple of hours and will stave us off. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm kind of playing. So my days are gaming are so structured. It's like in the week, it's kind of like my single player stuff I'm usually playing. And then a Sunday for a few hours in the evening, shoot the shit with Jay and a few friends and play an online multiplayer.
Yeah. That's good because the multiplayer stuff for me, I've always been chasing that feeling of having a real good online experience with the Midlife Gamer crew. It was Killzone 3 for me. We used to play it every week, either on a Saturday or a Sunday, for over 18 months, I think it was. And I really enjoy playing that, and I've not had a online experience like that since. I did play Destiny and Destiny 2, but I knew what it was involved in. You had to be at a certain place at a certain time to take the, and I just, no. So you're right. The multiplayer thing for me had not really been a thing since the early 2010s, really. That was like the last proper time that I dedicated to. I think I put in over 160 hours on Killzone 3 online only, Which was quite a lot. And I've never really... Uncharted 2 on the PlayStation 3 was pretty good online.
Right.
I played quite a bit of that.
Yeah.
But recent multiplayer stuff, like I tried Rainbow Six Siege, is it? I think it is, a few years
back.
No,
it's the same. Like, the problem is a lot of these like competitive online games have got such a hardcore scene that you mentioned, like Destiny specifically as well, is... You have to keep up.
Yeah.
You've got to continue to play and practice and earn, like, understand the latest meta and know your character, especially with like Rainbow Siege, is know what your character does inside out and the right scenario to use them. Yeah. Like, I've had like consistent multiplayer games, but they've always been small scale, less competitive.
Yeah.
So we mentioned Monster Hunter Wilds earlier. But I've got a history dating back to like Monster Hunter Tri, which is my first ever Monster Hunter, of playing that. And Monster Hunter, whilst can be played like solo, it does lead you very heavily into doing online.
Yeah.
Like, and me and Jeremy specifically have spent the last like 12 years plus playing Monster Hunters online together.
Yeah.
If there's a new one, it's always the two of us. And then there's a few people that are kind of jumping up between us that are mutual friends. But generally, there's a core of me, Jay, and one or two others that will always be there with it.
Yeah.
And it's more a case of those like kind of almost cooperative online games. Like even Destiny is one. Like I put so many, like I think over 2,000 hours across Destiny 1 and 2.
Wow.
online. And I was doing like raids and dungeons and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
But it was like you had to commit, you had to put time in.
Absolutely.
You had to practice, and like if you're going into a raid, especially, it's a six-man thing with like high level dungeons and puzzles and gunplay that you can just casually drop into a raid and do it and drop out again. So to kind of keep up to speed with that just required an insane amount of commitment.
Yeah.
And it got to a stage where with Destiny, I think it must have been over a year, maybe 2 years ago, I stopped playing that and just went like flat cold turkey. And I think because I was that much older, I was able to do it. And not think, oh God, I need it, this that cost sink fallacy thing, isn't it? Where it's like, oh, if I stop playing now, all that time's wasted.
Yeah.
It was like, if you keep playing, you're wasting more time.
Wasting more time. Exactly.
It's like, how does that even work out? So
it's a bit like when World of Warcraft launched and I was into the Warcraft universe. Like I played Warcraft 1, 2, and 3. And like, I knew at the time, and this is why I never started it. If I play World of Warcraft, I'm not going to play anything else.
No,
I would be dedicating my life to just playing one game and one game only, and I wasn't prepared to do that. So no. I've never played World of Warcraft, and I still haven't played it because I know if I'd started it, I wouldn't be playing anything else. And I know people who've done that; they spent literally probably hundreds of thousands of hours now. I mean, it's been going more than 20 years now. I think.
Yeah, a long time. Yeah, a long time.
A long time. And I knew. If I was going to do that, that I wouldn't play anything else, and I was not prepared to do that, so I made sure I never played it, and I never have.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not what they call a monogamous gamer. I stick with it. Like the idea of me sticking with the one, and that's kind of always been as I've gotten older as well. Is like I'd hate the idea now of only having a single game to play, and my time was focused purely on just that one game. Yeah. Because I've got some friends who. They still play the games and things, but like he's been playing RuneScape, old school RuneScape, for over a decade, and he still does.
Yeah,
and I couldn't imagine playing a game for that long.
I've played games for a long time, but not like for
not the same game
for over a decade. No,
no, no, absolutely not. So I think my gameplay habits, and I think is with that as well, is I've started to. Appreciate like how the craft is in games now. So the single player experiences are more than they ever used to be. There's a lot more, there's better writing in there. There's like better fleshed out stories, more engaging cinematography in the games. Like you look at The Last of Us, that was a big one where it was like, you know, well renowned to being like a very, very good game that tells an interesting story with some interesting characters. And it relies on the artistry and cinematography and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of games, like I remember a few years ago, it was like, oh, the death of the single player story-driven narrative. and it's kind of overdone, and it's gone full circle again. And you've got some amazing single player titles.
Absolutely.
Typical Ghost of Yote being a prime recent example that both of us loved.
My brother's just completed it, and he loved every fucking minute of it. The same as
yeah. But then I also love those moments as I'm older now. Is like I knew I liked Ghost of Tsushima. I took a punt on Ghost of Yote, but then when I played it, I adored it. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm finding that now occasionally as I'm getting older, I'm like picking and choosing games and then focusing my time on it to kind of really engross and get the most out of it when I'm playing it.
Absolutely.
I don't think if I was playing Ghost of Yote and a slew of other games at the same time and chopping and changing it out, I probably wouldn't appreciate it as half as much as I had.
No. It's like I always set myself challenges in games that I like. Like, for example, I talked about Skywalker Saga a few episodes ago, the Lego one. I played through the game and I'd enjoyed it, but I didn't really think about getting the platinum because the platinum is a massive grind. Yeah. And I set myself the challenge to get the platinum and I did it. Was it enjoyable? Parts of it were.
They should have paid you a salary for doing that, right?
Well, it's just ridiculous what you've got to do to get the platinum. And same for the Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
Now, I played through that game three times in its entirety, the story. This time, I wanted to experience the full game, 100%, both the main game and the Undead Nightmare. Did it, and I thought, well, if I'm doing that, I might as well do the platinum, so which is what I did. Again, was it enjoyable? Most of it was. Yeah. So it's kind of, in my mind, it's if I enjoy a game enough, like if I really get engrossed in a game like Ghost of Yote, for example, I will try and experience that game to the fullest, as in try and achieve everything that's available in the game as a trophy or platinum, which more or less gets you everything in the game. You see everything.
Yeah, that's for the most part,
it's kind of what they're designed to do. But then there's been other games where I've enjoyed, and I'm like, I think it was it Max Payne 3? I think it was Max Payne 3 on the PlayStation 3. I really enjoyed that game.
Yep.
Was it going to get the platinum? No. Because one of the trophies is to make it through the entire game without dying. Because if you die, you go right back to the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
No, I'm not about that. That's why I didn't get the platinum for Wolfenstein 2, because there's a difficulty called Mein Leben difficulty, which is the hardest difficulty of the game. But if you die, it takes you right back to the beginning of the game. So you could make it to the very end boss and die, and you're right back to the beginning of the game. That's too much for me.
Yeah, there's people out there that love that, though.
Oh, God, and there's people who love doing it, but no.
The same people that do dance mat runs of Dark Souls games.
Yeah, or blindfolded. I've seen someone do it blindfolded.
Yeah.
Oh, why? I mean, I like a challenge, but that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I think with all that being said and done, I think I've also grown in as much as, like, I do appreciate a good challenge in the game now as well.
Yeah.
Whereas before, if I found something too hard, I'd just sack it off.
Yeah.
And it kind of started because I hadn't played any of the Soulsborne games properly until I went back to Bloodborne 2 about 6 years after it came out.
Mm.
And it's only been the last like 5 years or so
mm-hmm.
that I've picked up the Dark Souls. So I've played through Dark Souls 1 can get in a bin. I hate Dark Souls 1. I did try and end up and back and get last that game.
Platinum for that, you know.
Yeah, I bet you did. Yeah, yeah. But no, I did like, I like the Platinum on Bloodborne, really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
Whilst I didn't get the Platinum, I was taken through the entirety of like Dark Souls 3, like start to finish. The guy, like Elden Ring, got the Platinum in Elden Ring. I got the Platinum in Night Rain when that came out. So the slightly challengey of the new Souls kind of thing, I do appreciate those and enjoy those as I get older. But again, they can be, that's about as far co-op as I tend to go, like outside of friends.
Yeah.
So obviously when you summon in that kind of, there's like strangers, and that's about as far as I'll go.
Yeah.
I'll summon a stranger for something and play it that way, but that's it. And the rest of the stuff I can't do. So like the Bloodborne one I did purely by myself. Elden Ring, a lot of it I did by myself, apart from the odd bit here. They like the end boss in that, it took me 3 days to do.
Yeah.
Come the time, but I did it, and I literally like left the floor when I beat him for the first time. And it's like, yes, I did it. And I think is that experience from getting older, probably.
Yeah.
You know, sitting by myself and just kind of doing it and grinding through it, is that something I enjoy now that I'm older. Absolutely. Yeah. Would I have enjoyed it back in my earlier days? Probably not, because no. It's like, it's quite a solid, you know, it's a lonely experience. It can be a lonely experience back then, because I was so used to that community gaming, that online, the chat, the banter. And now I'm like, I don't want to talk to people. I talk to people all day in work.
Exactly, yeah. It's like what I used to do when I was like in my late teens, or even from my mid-teens onwards, was I would very rarely complete games. I would play games. I would play as many games as I possibly could, but it wouldn't be often that I would complete games. I mean, I used to get my sisters involved in the adventure games, like the LucasArts games, like Secret of Monkey Island, Secret of Monkey Island 2, Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, Zack McCracken, Alien Mind Bend. We used to play them together because we enjoyed solving the puzzles together. You know, and I would finish those games, but it wasn't often. These days, I will try and complete as many games as I enjoy. Before I come to a position where if I'm enjoying a game, I will try and complete it. If I'm not enjoying a game, I will put it down. I'll maybe give it another shot, a bit like Silent Hill F. I've given that a good couple of shots, and I just, no, it's just not for me.
No.
As much as I enjoyed Silent Hill 2 Remake, and I did enjoy that, I tried Silent Hill F, and I'm like, no.
So I think that's part of, like, you know, the maturing thing when it comes to games, is just recognizing that and going, actually, you know what? Yeah, it's not for me. And that's okay. Yeah. And that's the thing, man. It's like, you know, it's a game that is critically liked, and a lot of people have a lot of praise for it. But if you don't like it, you don't give a shit as you get older.
No.
It's like, whereas before, you didn't want to be that outcast and go, I did like this game where everyone else seems to love it. Nowadays, I'm like, yeah, I don't really care. Okay. I don't like something.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. It's a bit like Night Rain. You enjoyed it and loved it, platinumed it. I played one or two sessions of it. I'm like, nah. Yeah. This game ain't for me.
funny about Night Rain, if you'd asked me that for the first 20 hours of that game, I'd tell you I hated it, and it's the worst fucking game I've ever played.
That's what made me laugh. Jeremy was telling you were hating it, and then the next thing you're getting the platinum. I'm like, what the hell?
It was a weird one, because it's almost like a turning point in it. I was hitting my head against a brick wall, and I'd play it like every night. I'd come home from work, and I'd like hit my balls with a brick for like 4 hours in an evening. That's where I felt like I was doing. And then all of a sudden, like, it just clicked. And then I started, like, defeating the Night Lords and did one and did another. And then I was like, oh, I'm actually getting quite good at this now. I kind of know what I'm doing. And I think it took me, it was like the 40 or 50-hour mark, might be even 60-hour mark.
Wow.
To get the platinum.
Yeah.
But I like it. If I were to look back and reflect upon it, I thoroughly enjoyed the entire thing. Like, achieving the platinum, I genuinely really enjoyed it.
You got to a barrier, and instead of like just saying sack it off, you thought I'm just going to carry on and carry on and carry on, and then you ended up actually really enjoying it and getting the platinum, which is amazing.
Yeah, basically Stockholm syndrome, the game, effectively.
Kind of, yeah. Wow.
But that's a recent example, I think, of the way in which my attitude towards gaming has changed, because, like you said, completing games wasn't a thing years ago. Yeah. As you were younger, you just
I'll just buy it. I've played it. I've got enough out of it. Move on to the next one.
I'll just buy a new one. I'll go and trade like a stack of five games in the game store and get another one and try that one. And if that doesn't work, I'll just go and trade that one in and buy something else.
Yeah.
And you'd lose like 10, 15 quid every time you did that. We didn't care. It's like, that's fine. Get to play a new game now. That was it. That was the cycle. Yeah. But yeah, like, as you kind of get older, responsibilities change. But I feel as if my appreciation is higher for games. And I am now in a renaissance almost, where I am back to thoroughly enjoying the games that I'm playing.
Yeah.
And I think we're just so lucky to have the games that are coming out to the level that they're coming out.
Definitely.
And not even just like AAA stuff. I'm talking like indie stuff as well. They're still landing through and leaking through. Like, one of the games, funny enough, we didn't talk about, what was it called? I only discovered it recently. It looks phenomenal. It looks like Blade Runner mixed with, Full Throttle.
Yes.
It's like some of the gameplay elements of that.
Oh, right.
Set in like a cyberpunk world. Let me find out what it's called.
Okay.
And another recommendation for me is like, keep an eye on it and have a look at it. But I saw it and I was like, what is this game? Replaced is called.
Okay.
And it's out on Xbox and PC March 12th. So it's like really, really soon coming out.
Mm.
Briss got this really, we're kind of going off topic, but we'll kind of end on this one, I guess. So
yes.
it's got this really like unusual art style where it's kind of pixelated characters, but then it's all beautifully lit and 3D modeled like backgrounds and spaces.
Yeah.
It's a really unusual juxtaposition with the two. And then the gameplay is like elements of side scrolling action. So it's all set from like a 2D perspective, like side on.
Yeah.
And then between those elements are exploration, like an old school LucasArts game. So you're talking to characters, you're doing side missions, you have dialogue options and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Looks amazing. And this, the aesthetic looks really cool. So yeah, replaced. Definitely keep an eye on that one. But another recommendation for me at the end of the episode.
Look forward to that one. So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening. If you have been doing so. I'll go through the social media stuff. You can get us for any show feedback at twoguys3consoles. That's all letters, no numbers, at yahoo.com. We've got a Discord channel, which is free to join. The link is in the description. You can get us on Blue Sky, Instagram, and YouTube, which is audio only, at twoguys3consoles. We also have a Facebook group and TikTok, which we never use. if you want to get me on Instagram, I'm at mleach26, and if you want to get me on Blue Sky, I'm at mattleach1. And where can we get you, Kyle, on Instagram and Blue Sky?
Yeah, so not on Blue Sky, but I'm not really much of a social person, but I'm on Instagram though. Just the word Disco Beaver and an underscore, and that will find me. Usually tattoos and gaming is what you'll find on my feed.
Excellent stuff. Right, well, we're back to normal next week, I think. So we will see you next week, and thank you for listening.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.